Yay. Okay. Well, welcome everybody. My name is Alexandra Sappington. I am an intern at LSU New Orleans. I just went through this interview process not that long ago. We are also very grateful to have Dr. Burns on here tonight. He is the chair at Oklahoma, so he has interviewed plenty of us, including myself, so he knows what all I did wrong last year. And we're really excited to talk to you guys about this. I know interview season seems really stressful, but I want to go ahead and tell you that I loved interview season. To me, it was a ton of fun. It's an interview both ways. They're getting to know you as much as you're getting to know them, and you will feel the vibes as much as you might think you won't over Zoom. So we're just here to reassure you. We're here to answer the questions that you guys have submitted. I do have the list pulled up for us to talk about. And you're just going to see kind of the perspective of someone who just went through it versus someone who has been doing this for a while. And feel free to submit any questions that you might have in the chat. We're going to go through the ones that were submitted first, but we're happy to answer. Interrupt us if you want to hop on the mic. Feel free if you have any questions for what we've been doing.
And you know, really too, this is a really good opportunity for just to workshop together, right? Like let's workshop this and have some answers to questions or have an approach that we know you're going to be asked, and we want to coach you, we want to get you ready and help you succeed in this. Most of the time when fourth year students are about to start interviews, what we reflect on is our medical school interview experience, which uniformly was probably not as good as what you're about to experience. So I my hope is to provide you the program side of and the motivation of what we're about during this time of year. And that is to bridge the distance between us and you and get to know you all better as people. Okay. So Alex, you just want to go through the questions and like we'll just start it wherever you want to, and
Absolutely.
we'll jump on the chat if people want to put questions in the chat. And I really want to tailor this session to you all. What's on your mind? That would be the most favorable outcome for me.
Yeah, don't be shy. Turn on your cameras. We're here to engage with you. I mean, Dr. Burns and I can talk for hours by ourselves. So if y'all aren't interacting with us, we can make it happen either way. I guess the first thing I would start off with is, which isn't a question that I got, but I would like to show that this was my interview setup. You get a lot of questions about how do I set up my space for interviews, and I would say either have stuff or nothing. Have stuff that you can talk about, your talking pieces. Like I got asked in almost every interview about my college softball jersey. Everyone would be like, "Oh, is that you?" I'd be like, "Yeah, cool, right?" So have talking pieces behind you. It's interactive and it's engaging. Don't have distracting things. Don't have inappropriate things. We shouldn't have to say that, but you never know. So just make sure your wall is clean, organized. You can have, if you like plants, have plants behind you. Like whatever it is that you're passionate about, put it there. I guarantee someone's going to talk to you about it.
Yep, that's a great point. And just remember too, you are a professional and you want a professional view of you to be showcased. I did an interview, it's been a couple of years ago now. There was a pile of dirty laundry behind the applicant. And you know what? Laundry's got to get done. We have to do laundry. Like I get it. But you want to come across looking polished and professional. Think of it almost like an executive interview, right? Like you want to put your best foot forward. So for me, I don't know if you guys can see all the letters up here behind me. My colleagues nationally like to give me a hard time that I'm still learning my alphabet, but in reality, my wife put this together, and the B is for Burns, and my wife's name is Denise, and Bo, and then Caleb, Avery, and Leah are our children, our kids. So that's what is behind me. So if you've seen a Zoom with me in it over the last, you know, however many years, you're going to see this background.
Yeah. And we understand in Zoom, like you may have to do it from your room. Say you're in a studio apartment, right? And your bed is inevitably going to be behind you. That's fine, but make your bed. Make it look neat and clean. Like we are very understanding, but just look professional. I think the best place to start is actually the question that I brought up to you just a second ago, Dr. Burns, kind of talking about the timeline of interviews, because we're getting into it, they're fast approaching, and I'm sure people are getting a little bit nervous. So one of the questions we received is, Does scheduling interviews early or later in the season help or hurt how your rank goes? Because they said they could see this going either way, as people might want to interview the best applicants first. But also, what about if you crush your interview later in the season?
That's a great question. And so my response to that is I want you to understand the flow of information to the programs, right? So I checked in with our program director, Dr. Lee, yesterday, and we had, I don't remember, 450 applications or whatever. And I know that number will grow, obviously, but that's day one. So what's in those applications are a whole bunch of incomplete applications, right? So you got to remember that everyone that applies is in different stages of having slows, having step two scores, having getting their, their MSPEs in and done and things like that. And you probably won't get an interview until your step two score is in. I know that's not always going to be true, but that's usually true. And I say all that to tell you, it doesn't matter where you interview in the interview season, beginning or end. We are keeping an open mind as programs for every single day. And it's not a preferential thing. It's not, we're not looking at if someone interviews on day one versus day 10, and ranking them in that order. That's just not how it works. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. I think, Alex, you brought up a really good point earlier about, having in your own private head, your personal kind of rank list of where you want to go, it's probably a good idea to schedule a couple of interviews first. To kind of get more familiar and a little bit more comfortable with the process, which you will. You'll feel so much better after just a couple of interviews. And then that will help you kind of position you to look as good as you can.
Absolutely. And you'll see as you go through interviews, you get a lot of the same repetitive questions. By the end, I would say I definitely had interview fatigue. If you know my story a little bit, I couples matched. And so I did way more interviews than what the average applicant should do who's not couples matching. I did 20 plus, which is way too many. So do not recommend doing that unless you're in my kind of situation, or if you have some maybe red flags, which is another thing we'll talk about later. And as far as interviews goes with that. But I, by the end, felt almost robotic. That wasn't typically the feedback that I got. Like I still seemed engaging, but when you inevitably get the question, tell me about yourself, I could just be like, my name's Alexandra. I was born and raised in New York City and I went to performing arts high school and then I played college softball. And like, it was the same exact routine every single time. And to me, it felt just automatic and robotic because I was prepared for that question. So just trying to check yourself to still seem engaged in your interviews, even when you're like, oh, I've answered this question 1,000 times already. And even within your interview day, you're going to be interviewing with multiple people, and multiple people might ask you that question. So even when you're on session number 5 and you're still getting told, tell me about yourself, you have to find a way to still feel engaged in that. Making eye contact through the Zoom camera as best as you can. And for me, what that looks like, and it's what I have right now, is I have our little faces directly underneath the camera so I can still like see myself, but it looks like I'm looking more at the camera than I am looking down, as if I were to have the faces down at the bottom of my screen. So there's little ways to make yourself look like you're more engaged than maybe you feel like. So
100%.
let's see. The next question, I guess since I kind of talked about staying engaged and feeling the vibes of a program, a question that we got is, what can you ask residents to elicit more information about their experiences and the culture of the program? For me, something I found that was really useful and kind of a trick that I picked up from my mentors was to ask, when is the last time that they hung out as a group? Or like, what is the, like, especially when you're talking to the residents, because obviously if you're talking to the attendings, like, when's the last time the residents hung out? They might not know that. So when you have your inevitable interview with some of the residents, just say, hey, when's the last time you guys did anything fun together? What'd you do? And if they don't have an answer to that, your little red flags might be going up, because why aren't they hanging out? But if they're like, oh yeah, we all went and took like a spin class together and then went to the brewery afterwards, like, they like each other and that the culture is good there.
Yeah, and I think you will get a much better sense of that than you think. One thing about residents, I don't think they fake it well, right? If they are, you are going to get an authentic view of that program when you have time with those residents. And hopefully you get some time, like either the social event, which may be the evening before, or during the day, you actually get to interview with the resident. So that's a great time to ask them, not only that question, but also, would you apply here again? If you had it all, if you had it to do all over again, or when you were going through interviews, what did you look for in a program and how did you decide? Because then that takes it into more of a general context, and then they may not feel so much on the spot when in reality, you're asking them why they picked their program. So.
For sure. And speaking to the socials, I know people who didn't go to any. I personally went to every single one. So you have to fathom, like I did 20 plus interviews plus 20 plus socials for those interviews. So it was a very busy season. Socials typically occur the night before, depending on the program. Some places kind of do bolus sessions where they'll do one for the month. And so everyone interviewing that month, they'll be at that social. So you'll have some very large socials where you might not get to ask as many questions. It's not as personal, but you definitely can still feel the vibes of the program. But typically they are done the night before or the week of. Sometimes there's just one. I went to every single one. I highly recommend it. But I will also say some programs don't do the best job with them. And I will say there are programs that I knew very well that did not portray themselves great over Zoom. So take it with a grain of salt. Like they're going to do the best they can to make it fun. But they also get interview fatigue because you have to think of the residents are doing a social every single night on top of our hectic resident schedules. Like we can get tired. So if there's not a lot of people, that's a red, it could be a red flag. Maybe only two residents were able to hop on because so many are working. Just lots of things to consider, but also take a grain of salt. But I definitely recommend going. Feel the vibes, you'll feel the positivity or negativity, hopefully not, but you'll definitely get a good sense of the program from the socials.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the other thing I would say is we don't know who attends the socials. So if you miss one or don't attend, don't worry about that. I mean, we just don't have the bandwidth or interest in keeping track of who shows up and who doesn't. I mean, that is there for you guys to be a part of if your schedule allows. So if you can't make it, don't worry about it.
For sure. In the chat, we got asked how many interviews should the average candidate plan to attend?
So the number varies year to year, but basically the law of diminishing return, after 10 or 11 interviews, you're not any more likely to match. So for instance, if you do 10 interviews or 20, your likelihood of matching isn't any better than with 10 or 11 interviews. What happens every year is when ARIS opens, everyone is like on their phone immediately, like looking and waiting. And right now, everyone is in the hurry up and wait phase. And there is no way you're going to turn down an interview, the first wave of interviews that you get. And so the way that that works is we all start sending out invites once we've gotten reviewed and gone through them all. And that takes a few weeks, by the way. So we all have to review these and it takes time and we devote a lot of time to that. So then we start sending out interview requests. And then you will say yes. Like that for the first wave that goes out, you will absolutely say yes, even if it may be a place that you're like, I don't know. So then what happens is there's more and more that go out over time. And so then your number will increase. And then what you will do is you'll sit down and look at it and go, okay, I have 15. I'm not couples matching, so I don't really want to do 15. So what can I get rid of? So to answer your question, 10 or 11 is probably your goal.
Absolutely. That's what I was told last year. I was told an average applicant, it's like a 99% match rate at 12. So any more than that, it does not make any difference at all. And you will definitely see them come out in waves. Like the universal release day, I don't know what day it is this year, but I got a large bolus on that day. So be prepared for that. And then as the time goes on, people will be dropping. You will come off of wait lists and get other boluses in the future of interviews. So you get a lot pretty early on and then some more later. You think most programs abide by the October 18th? Not all of them, but a lot do. And if you follow some programs on like Twitter, a lot of them announce who is following. I did get, I would say maybe 50-50 of who did the release day for me and who didn't. So
Yeah, and that is something that We on the cord side have tried not to mandate, but here's our rationale and why we do this is to everybody's on an even playing field, and that's where the recommendation comes from. But for some programs, that hurts them. It is harder for them to either get everything done by October 18th, or they don't feel like they can be as competitive. So we put it out there as a recommendation, but CORD is not a regulatory body, but we do try to, maximize equity for students and also support for programs, which is the kind of the rationale behind the unified release date.
And speaking of scheduling, one of the questions that we got is how to handle receiving conflicting interview dates from programs. So you typically don't get offered a specific date. You get offered the interview invite, and then you go to whatever platform they're using and you schedule a date. So that to me is where one of the most pieces of stress came in because it is somewhat first come, first serve. So the programs are going to send out their bolus of interviews, and everyone who gets the interview invite at that same time is now up for grabs on those interviews. So one thing I recommend to a lot of people, which worked well for me, is I made a specific Gmail for my interviews. It was only used for eRADS. So if I got an email and my watch buzzed and I saw it was Gmail at that specific email address, I knew what it was. I'd immediately grab my phone and try to hop on and figure out what I could schedule. You should have a plethora of dates available, especially this early in the season. And then that's where we talked about before about being strategic about your rank list internally, what you anticipate it to be. That's where you can start trying to plan accordingly. So someone who you think might be lower on your rank list, maybe book them for that December slot when you're getting a little bit more tired, or book them early when you want the practice interview. Whoever you think is going to be your top, maybe schedule for like early of November or so. So definitely just play it as you get the offers. But try to schedule them out. And the other thing I would recommend with scheduling too, I did a lot. So my schedule was I tried to do two per week. So I did two, sometimes three per week from October till February. And I spaced them out. So I tried to never do 2 days in a row, especially because I'm still on rotations, right? You guys still have to go to school. So I tried to make it like Tuesday and Thursday or Monday and Wednesday or whatever it is.
Yeah, and I will say this, regardless of your feelings about virtual or in person or whatever the format is, the scheduling is infinitely easier for virtual interviews, right? Because so if you think about, you get an invite for one place that geographically 6 states away from where you are. If that's an in-person interview, that's a flight, that's a drive, that's a lot of travel and a lot of money. That is an advantage of the virtual platform. And the only other thing I would say is I would do a really honest assessment of yourself in how what's your administrative skill set? And what I mean by that is how organized are you and how responsive are you to email? If you are someone who struggles with email and staying on top of things, man, I would try to get an email buddy or something that can help you stay on top of all this. A few years ago, we had an applicant that showed up for the initial Zoom, in, like the big meeting of all the applicants for the day with our coordinator. And he got on there and she had a little OU thing in the background. He goes, "Wait a minute, where is this?" And she said, "The University of Oklahoma in Tulsa." And he goes, "Oh man, I gotta go," and just clicked off. And so I think he had double booked for the day. So it's just a good reminder, like just stay on top of things, you know?
I was going to say things happen, but that's pretty bad.
Bless him. Yeah.
Can probably match somewhere.
Did. I'm sure and it's a hectic season. It is a hectic season for you all, for us, and it really does feel like, that you're at that part of the roller coaster where it's going up and it's about to do the big drop, and it's exciting and it's scary all at the same time.
Absolutely. And like I said at the beginning, it is a lot of fun and you have to see it that way. So I think with that being said, I think we covered all of the scheduling side of things. So I think it's a good time to transition into what to actually expect out of the interview day, because we did get a lot of questions about that.
Yeah, that's a good thought. So normally, and there will be some variations of this, but typically what happens is you will all be brought like this. There'll be a screen and there'll be 6 or 8 or 10 or 12, not more than probably not more than 16, unless it's a really big program and they may do 40 for the day. I mean, it could be a pretty good amount of people, but they will bring you together in a big setting like this. The program coordinator will do a welcome and talk about a few things. And then usually what happens is the program director does a slideshow, like a PowerPoint or a keynote presentation about the program. And this is where I would have like a notebook or something handy to take notes and keep track of all these places that you're interviewing. You've put in a lot of time, you've invested your time and your money in this process. And the reason I always say to take notes is because it's a long time between now and March till you put your rank list in, and that will help you remember the day and the positive things and the neutral things and maybe the negative things about each program. But it's really important to write those down. So then you will do your interviews either on Zoom or Thalamus or whatever platform it is they use. And those are usually one-on-one. Sometimes there'll be a two people interviewing you, but they're usually pretty short, 15, 20 minutes. I don't know anybody that goes over 30 minutes. I mean, we're EM people, right? Like 30 minutes is a really long time. So there'll be it may feel a little bit like speed dating, but you can get a lot accomplished in 15 or 20 minutes during the interview. So they are going to ask you questions about your application. And one of the questions that we had was, how do I handle red flags, or how do I handle the things in my application that's a red flag? And the what I want you to remember, the teaching point that I want you to remember is, once you are invited for an interview, you are now on an even playing field with every other person that's there. If your red flag or whatever it is you're apprehensive about was that bad, you wouldn't have gotten an invite. Right? So we know there is no such thing as an absolutely perfect application. Whatever it is in your application, if there is something that you feel like you need to defend, just take it on. Take it head on. Display some insight and some ownership and some accountability and how you overcame that particular setback or challenge.
Absolutely. What I did for note taking and the way I built my rank list, which is what I did all season, is I had a sticky note, like a post-it that I kept right underneath me. I had the name of the program in the center in big writing, and then I took notes around the name the entire time, and then I built my rank list with that. So after my interview, I took my sticky note, stuck it on the wall. And then after my next interview, stuck the next one on the wall, whether I liked them above or below. And the entire season, I was building my rank list for me. One of the tips that I was given that I told myself I was going to do and that I did not, and I wish I did, was to take a video reaction of myself after every interview, because that's another great way to feel the vibes moving forward. Like, there were so many programs that I was like, oh yeah, I really liked them. Like, I don't remember why. Even though I had my sticky note, it still didn't encompass the entire interview season. One thing I did do was I would call my mom a lot after interviews, and I would tell her how they went. And I think she could tell how excited I was about some programs. So even later on in the interview season, I was able to call her and say, how did I react after that interview? Do you remember? So just having those people to talk to and keep yourself in check for how you're feeling throughout the interview season. Because, like we said, it is a sprinting marathon. You have to be able to keep track of everyone to the best of your ability, whether you're an Excel spreadsheet person, a post-it person, a record yourself kind of person. You just got to figure out what works for you, but do it immediately. Don't procrastinate it. Like, start your system early and keep it up for the whole season.
The one thing I'll say about that is you need to extend a little patience to your family and understanding. They don't know how this process works. So you're going to call your mom or your dad or whoever it is in your family. You're going to, well, I interviewed at LSU today. And they're going to say, did you get the job? Well, I no. Oh, you didn't get the job. No, that's not how it works. And then you have to like explain the whole thing. So they're on a learning they're on a learning curve too. So it's always I always get kind of a kick out of the family, teaching of how the match works and all that other stuff.
There are fantastic videos for it. NRMP has one for the couples match that every time my family would be like, how, what does it mean, the couples match? Wait, so you don't get to go together necessarily? I would just send them the YouTube link and be like, just Just watch it. I can't explain this anymore. So there's
Yeah.
resources out there.
For sure.
Let's see. I guess the next question that would be good now that we're in the interview section would be tips on handling difficult or unexpected questions during the interview.
Okay, that's a great question. So, like right now, I got my laptop here. I got my little camera here, my built-in camera. What you guys can't see is the edge of my screen, right? You can't see what's around it. So one of the tips I always give people is put sticky notes around your monitor or on a backdrop behind where it is. And so there's some questions I want you to remember, okay? And you can write these down or you can whatever, but you're going to be asked these things. And it may be, tell me about a time that you failed and how you overcame it. What are your strengths and weaknesses? And we can unpack that one in just a minute too. There's a challenging one, which is why should I hire you? Because remember, this is a job interview, right? Those are probably pretty, guaranteed that's going to happen. Tell me about your experience outside of EM, outside of medicine. Tell me something that's not in your packet about you that's important. Right. And so just remember too, I don't think there's wrong answers. I don't think there's wrong answers, right? Like these are difficult questions, but they're your questions and they're your answers. Okay. So this will happen. I guarantee this will happen. You will leave an interview and go, why did I say that? Or I should have said this. Don't beat yourself up. This is all a process. I promise you, we don't internalize that or worry about that. The person answering the question tends to worry about that a lot more. So let's unpack what are your weaknesses, your biggest weaknesses? That comes up a lot. And I think we struggle as people with the word weakness. And so what I want you to say or think about is, and you can even rephrase this, and you can say, I don't know about weaknesses, but I can tell you what I'm working on. Because that demonstrates some insight into your growth and development as a student of emergency medicine. I want to get better at reading EKGs. So here's what I'm doing. I'm going to this website, I'm reading this book. I'm trying to get better and more efficient in the clinical setting. So I'm working with a senior resident right now. And in whatever that answer is, that demonstrates to the person that's interviewing you that you are interested in your trajectory as a learner. And wherever you are and however gifted you want to be better. And so you want to push yourself. And I'll tell you the most successful residents are the proactive learners and the people that don't have to be told you need to read and you need to study. We should all be doing that every day or not, we should all be doing that actively. But the students that do that on their own are going to succeed and going to do well.
I definitely think playing it back, obviously, to emergency medicine is important. Like, don't just say, oh, I want to work on my golf game. Make sure you're bringing it back to emergency medicine. For me, what my typical answer was, which is truthful, is I said, I'm too much of an empath. And I know we always go into the like, you don't want to say something that's actually a positive and like have it be a negative type of deal. But for me, the way I worded it to be a negative was for me, I'm such an empath that something that I'm afraid of is taking difficult cases home with me because that's something that's very real in emergency medicine. We see a lot of really traumatizing things. And I know myself that I don't want to bear the weight of taking all that home with me. And it's something that I definitely needed to work on. And I was able to bring up an example from one of my sub-Is of a very difficult case that I had, and how appreciative I was to the program that they had us do a debrief after the case and did like a mental health check for everyone. And I just said, like, that's something that I'm definitely going to take with me for residency is to always do a check-in with myself and my co-residents and all that kind of stuff, and really try to dissociate but still remain empathetic in my job because it's important to protect your own mental health. So that was kind of my positive turned negative answer.
Yeah, I think that's good. The other one that you probably need to have the answer for, and you said it earlier, was tell me about yourself. And that question is
Oh, yeah.
so broad. I mean, there's just no limits to the way that can go. And the way that I coach people to answer that is to say, well, I can tell you what got me into this chair today to talk to you. And then you can control that narrative a little bit about what it's about. I wanted to do emergency medicine since this, and this is how I got here, or whatever that is. But again, that's your story. That's your story to tell, but you are allowed to put some guardrails on how the conversation starts and where it goes, because I do think making it a little bit more narrow makes it easier to answer.
Absolutely. Another common question that I got was, why us? So make sure you do your research about the program before you interview with them. I mean, granted, you are going to typically have a PowerPoint presentation about the program beforehand, so maybe you'll learn what you like about them then, but I wouldn't wait till then, just in case some of the programs I interviewed with did not do a PowerPoint, and you don't want to be banking on that and then not have that come to fruition right before your interview. So back to his sticky notes that we discussed, I had a sticky note for every program up next to the camera of what I liked about them. So that answer was always prepared and ready to go for every single interview day.
And that can also be, I saw this on your website, or I know you take eight residents a year. That is a class size that really appeals to me. I don't want to go to a big program and get lost. Or you can say, I know you take 30 residents a year, and I love the idea of a big residency. Again, there's not a wrong answer as long as you have an answer. And the programs want to know that you are interested in them, because they have multiple faculty who have read your packet and have looked at it. And so give them, some kind of affirmation that you really are interested, and it's not just, I needed my 10 interviews and you were one.
For sure. I always, every single interview day, and again, when I say don't become robotic monotonous, this is a question that kind of did become that way for me because the programs that I applied to, I had a spreadsheet of things that I wanted in a program. So my answer pretty much always looked like, well, I made a spreadsheet of things that I liked out of a program, and these things included A, B, C, D, E, and you guys have all of those to offer. And obviously, if I didn't have one of them, I would, make sure I tailored it to the program. But you need to know what you're looking for in a program and why you applied to these places in the first place. And hopefully you have some consistency to it. Another question that I did get asked a lot too is kind of just about my sub-Is in general, why I selected where we wanted to go. And obviously you sub-Ied hopefully where you want to end up. But for me, one of the answers I gave was I wanted to look at a broad spectrum of places because we know there's academic, there's county, there's community programs. And so my sub-Is reflect that I really wanted to see what I wanted out of our program. So I was able to touch on that a lot, especially when they say, why us? You need to know what type of program they are, what type of resource do they have, how are they advocating for their patients? And each of those types of programs have different resources available. So definitely knowing who you're speaking to and what they're passionate about as a program comes through.
Yeah, and the other thing I would say too, just as a backdrop, kind of wider picture, is before you start your interviews, practice with one of your classmates. And that may sound really silly and like, why would I want to do that? You'll feel better. The answers will become more. You'll become more comfortable. So another issue, particularly for this group, I get this question a lot. So what do we do if the program isn't DO friendly? Right? That's a good question. So if they invite you to an interview, then they don't care, right? So just remember, we don't know what people put on the rank list. And that impacts allopathic, osteopathic, that impacts underrepresented in medicine, that impacts DEI. We don't know what a program has on their rank list. So don't confuse their value system for who they matched. Because remember, you guys are the ones that are in the driver's seat for matching programs. I'm not the other way around. And that's good. And that's the way it should be. The students should be the one that are in charge of making that list. CORD put out a statement. Was it last year? I think last year we put out a statement on equivalency of training and hoping that would encourage programs to look. I know there's still some that don't feel that way, and as an osteopathic physician, that bothers me. And I've just, tried to use do what others did before me, which is use their influence and leadership to hopefully help change things for the folks that are coming behind them. So we'll continue to fight that battle. And I don't know. Any other thoughts on that?
I don't think so. I mean, especially like you said, if they invited you to interview, they're looking at you, right? Maybe they haven't taken a DO in the past or an IMG or whomever it is. Because they didn't rank them, like the people themselves didn't rank them high, but out of fear. I mean, someone has to be the first, right? Let it be you. Why can't it be? I mean, I see both sides of it. Of there's definitely some people who are like, well, why would I want to go there if they don't like me? Well, they're interviewing you, and it's not that they don't like your type. They're trying to get your type in, right? That's why they're interviewing you. So either be the first one, or just advocate that you did get an interview there, and they're trying to get DOs, IMGs, whomever it is, into their program. It just becomes a chain. Now, don't get me wrong, there are definitely some programs out there that they just don't take us, but that's okay. It'll change eventually. That's what we're here for.
That actually makes me think of kind of the next series of questions, which is, what are the red flag? What are the questions that programs are not allowed to ask you? And that's important to know what those are. So should we go over that list maybe?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so what can programs, what are they not allowed to ask you? So gender orientation, are you planning on having a family? I mean, these are things that they're not supposed to ask you, right? You will be, there's one of two ways this happens. Under the interview fatigue headline, we get tired and someone will ask you a question that maybe they're not supposed to. And this can happen as a complete accident. So the phrase I want you to remember is, I want you to say this. If someone asks you, what's your religion? What's your sexual orientation? What's your gender? Blah, blah, blah. You can say, oh, am I supposed to answer that? Because that takes the heat off of the person that's asking you that. And then hopefully their response is, oh, don't answer that. You're right. I'm not supposed to answer that. I'm sorry. I do know of times that that has not been the case, and people will press you for details that they shouldn't be asking. And all I would say is that's something that should go in your notes, right? That's an important data point. Now, if you have a family, if you want to know about things in that city, the schools, whatever, and you bring it up, hey, great, let's talk about it. Now we can talk about it. So again, the idea is you are in control of your information. Once you talk about it, then it's open. Like it's like saying, oh, that's a great picture behind you. Yeah, that's my family. Let's talk about that now, right? So, but again, that's your business and you're in charge of that information and how much you want to discuss.
Absolutely. And I think it's twofold too. You know, if you are someone who's considering having a family during residency, which is something that me and my husband are, right? Why would I want to go somewhere that's not supportive of it? Right. So, like, I can ask
Exactly.
that question. And sure, maybe there used to be a stigma with it because truthfully, it does put a little bit of a burden on the system of like, if when I get pregnant, I have to call out, well, who has to step up? My co-intern, someone has to cover the shift. Right. So, there's going to be ways that they work around that, though. You know, the programs are prepared for that situation. But if I said that to someone and they were just kind of like, oh, we have nothing in place, and gosh, I don't know, that's going to be such a burden on everybody else. Why would I want to go there if it's something that's really important to me? You want to go where you feel supported. So if it's something that is very important to you and you're okay with asking that question and maybe it ends up not going well, did you want to go there to begin with?
Yeah, great point. Great point.
Speaking of, I guess, other questions that are difficult, whether it's giving or receiving them, tips on just how to handle the difficult ones in general. I know we just kind of touched on it, but on the ones that aren't, like, that are allowed, that aren't not allowed, something that I would do if I was asked a question that did kind of stump me for a second, I would just go, wow, that's a great question. And just having that second would allow me to collect my thoughts and then start again. And it's totally okay to say, I need a second, because we're humans and sometimes questions, you get a lot of things flowing in the brain juices, you know, you get a lot of things to think about. And if you get a stumped question, like definitely some of the ethical questions that come up and you need to think about it for a second, take that second. It's okay. No one's gonna look down upon that. But I'm just someone who pretty much responds immediately, but there are definitely some times that I would say, wow, that's a good question, and just sit there for a moment. It feels longer on Zoom than it does if you were in person. So just think about it as if, Dr. Burns is standing in front of me right now, and I have a pause, which is normal in the cadence of speaking to people. Like, you're okay to take that pause. It just feels a little bit prolonged because it's on Zoom.
Yeah, and the other thing I would say too is, we want to have all the answers all the time, right? And just like you said, we're human beings. So I would encourage you to give yourself a little bit of grace, in those situations. And you're not going to know the answer to everything all the time, and that's okay. And it is okay to say, if they're gonna, if, and I don't know, we try our program, we try not to ask really difficult ethical questions because you're hopefully never going to be isolated in that moment, especially as an intern, right? Where you're like, okay, are you going to make the end of life decision? Well, no, you're not doing that by yourself, right? So, you can say, this is probably what I would do in that situation, but I would certainly ask my, I would make sure with my upper level, or my program director that this is, that I'm on target on this, because this is a little bit of some unsure, some shaky ground for me.
Overall, I did not get a lot of questions like this interview season. There were a couple programs that had them, but overall, most of my conversations ended up being like about beer because I put beer as a hobby, right? Like, it was so much more fun and personable than you guys are expecting it to be. Like, that's why I say I really enjoyed interview season. Like, it was mostly talking about my app, and your app should be things that you're passionate about. So it should be easy to talk about those. Also, that being said, make sure you know your app, right? If you put a research project on there, I did get asked about some of my research projects, and some of them were older, right? If you say, oh, I don't know, that's not going to look good. You should know your app inside and out.
Yeah. And again, to go back to the focus of the interviews, we're not trying to stump people. We're not trying to be difficult. We really are trying to, again, just get to know you guys. And so you will get 100% get questions about the hobbies. That's one of the things I write down. Like, I write down something on my notes before each interview day. I write down something about the personal statement because I want people to know that I've read them. And there's always some good talking points that are in that. And so then I'll also write, hobby. Everyone puts guitar down and I play guitar. So I'm always like, well, tell me what kind of guitar you have and what music do you like to play? And so we're just looking for some authentic conversation that gives us in some insight into, you as a person. One of the questions I used to ask is, tell me about the worst job you've ever had. And that was always really fun because, man, there's some lousy jobs, but it was a fun thing, and it gave me some insight into people, and good stories.
I know ERADS has already submitted at this point, so hopefully none of you guys did this, but don't put things on your hobbies that you don't actually do. Like, I've heard horror stories of people being asked, like Dr. Burns saying, like, oh, you play guitar, like, what do you like to play? And then you're like, well, I actually don't own a guitar. I like to listen to guitar. Like, just make sure what you did is on brand for what things that you can speak about and be passionate about. So I'm sure none of you guys made that mistake, but if you did, maybe read up on it really quickly and make it a fast hobby before you interview.
Sorry, my Zoom's frozen. Sorry. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
Can you repeat that? Oh
Yeah.
my goodness.
Oh, nice.
What else? I guess a lot of the questions that we got to, I think we're kind of coming to the end about things that were asked regularly during interviews. But then at the end of the interview, you're going to get asked, what questions do you have for me?
Yep. Yep.
I heard of a lot of really fun ones. A question that I asked a lot of interviewers, so you're going to get asked that every single interviewer that you have, right? So I had a list of questions that I like to ask, and I would spread them out, like maybe one or two per person, because I didn't want to ask them the same question, because after the interview, all of your interviewers are going to go in a room and talk about it. So if I just said, like, why do you work at your program to all of them, that's not very fun. And it doesn't look like I put a lot of effort into my interview. So I had a range of questions that I would ask people. The one that I was taught that I asked at least one person, typically the program director, which was fun, and I got a lot of positive feedback on it, was if you were given a $1 million grant, how would you use it? And I liked that question because it also shows insight to what the program director thinks is the weakness of the program. Because where are they going to use that money? Well, where do they need the money? So that was a fun question I asked a lot of people. Another one that I heard that was fun, which I didn't use, but now I wish I did, was because I'm a big Harry Potter fan. So, like, which house would your program be in? Like, just something fun like that. I've heard of, like, which Disney princess do you think your program would be? So
Yeah.
you can have fun ways to and ask questions to people that will actually give you good insight to the programs.
Yeah, some other things you can ask too are, to the program director, what are some things you're working on? What's a rotation you don't have that you'd like to have for your program? Do you have any fellowships? Are you developing any fellowships? What's the direction of the program over the 3 to 5 years? For the chair, if you're interviewing with the chair, say how are you on faculty hiring? What are you looking for in your faculty? What kind of expertise or additional training are you looking for? And that will give you some idea of where they're trying to build up, because chairs should always be thinking about like where do we want to be in 5 years? Another thing is you can ask any plans for increasing the number of residents they train each year. Where do your residents go after training? Things like that. So, interestingly enough, the American Board of Emergency Medicine will soon be making program pass rates public for the boards. And this is brand new. This was just announced the other day. Family medicine does this, internal medicine, pediatrics, and surgery already do this. So this will be something on the minds of program directors too. And so it'll probably come up at some point.
Yeah. Ask things that you're passionate about. Like if you're nationally involved, like this was something that was obviously very important to me since I'm on the RSO board. Like I asked, what kind of support do you give to people like me who are on the board and need to go to conferences? Like, are you flexible with that? And some programs were kind of like, oh, we'll try to fit it in. And like that was kind of a red flag to me because I want to go to conferences. I'm supposed to be there. I'm on the board for ACOEP, right? So I'm expected to be in Houston in a week and a half if you're not already signed up. Shameless plug. You guys should come to Scientific Assembly in Houston. It's going to be wonderful. Had to throw that out there. But that was something that was very important to me. So you could definitely get the vibes of things that you're passionate about based off asking questions.
Yeah, you'll get a much better sense of the program's priorities too, in those questions. So, what are some questions that we haven't covered? What are some areas? Just drop those in the chat if there's anything that we haven't covered. I think we got about 10 minutes left.
And I do
Make
think
sure.
one question that we haven't covered now that we're concluding our interview day is how do I follow up, right? Do I write a handwritten thank you note? Do I send an email? Do I phone call? What do I do?
The love letters question. Do I send love letters? You can. I don't know of a single program director that it influences, drastically. It may be a po little positive check next to your name, but I don't think it's going to result in you matching versus not matching at that program. I think that the big thing is, and I don't want to discourage you from doing it if it's something you feel strongly about, but what I do want to make sure is that you're not expecting a reply. There's some program directors that feel very strongly about not communicating with anyone at all until after the match. So if you do that, if you send an email or whatever and you don't hear anything back, don't worry about that. We're very, very, very careful about our communication with applicants prior to match. We want to make sure that we're not doing anything that could be looked as influencing your choices.
Absolutely. I personally did write thank you notes to the program directors. I did a handwritten thank you note. I would do it immediately after every interview. Like I would finish my interview. I had my stack of thank you notes to the side of my computer. I'd sit down and write it and put something memorable that we talked about. And the way I did it, instead of writing an interview or a thank you note to every single one of my interviewers, I would write it to the program director and then include, like, I really enjoyed speaking to X, Y, and Z today during my interviews. I enjoy getting to know more about your program from X, Y, Z capacity. I think that my whatever characteristic that came up in conversation would fit very well with the program because of this. And like, that's all I would say.
Yeah,
So
I
short
agree.
and sweet, itty bitty card. Like I just did it because that's how my mama raised me, was to write thank you notes for everything. So
Yep.
I would have felt guilty if I didn't do it. But
Same.
I, like you said, I don't think it changes anything.
So a couple questions in the chat. Is it rude to ask to repeat the question to make sure we answered it correctly? No, I don't think that's rude at all. I think, and you can even say, can you repeat the question? I want to make sure that I'm on target on my answer. That is, I don't think that's rude at all. I think that's really smart, to make sure that you're, targeting what it is that they want. And then letter thoughts on letters of intent. You mean like, I'm going to rank you to match. I really want to come to your program, that sort of thing.
I think so. My understanding is if you're going to do it, only do it to one. Like if you're writing your letter of intent, do not write multiple, because if you say I'm going to rank you highly, that means they know you're not their number, like the number one. I've been told if you are going to do a letter of intent, it is to your number one program, your number one program alone, and you say you are my number one program. We did send a letter of intent to our number one.
So I'll say this. I don't know, this may sound, I don't want this to sound crusty at all. Program directors have been burned by this so many times. They, because remember, this is your, for you guys, this is your one time to go through the match. We've been through it year after year after year. Program directors, some of them have been so burned by this phenomenon that they will read it and go, whatever, I'm going to make my rank list. I'm not going to change where you are because you say you're coming. I've had people, applicants texting me a week before match asking if they should buy tent and alley or if we're going to provide them one, and they can't wait to start, and then they're not on the list. And so, it happens, and it's not to say that we hold a grudge or we're angry or anything like that. We understand that you have to do what's best for you, but just understand that some of this is the program directors have been burned, so they may not be as influenced by that as you think. I think that's probably the best way to say that.
I would also say the reciprocal same goes to you guys. If you
Yes.
get a love letter from a PD, I'm not going to say don't believe it, but don't let it change your rank list either, because applicants have been burned for the same
Yes.
reason. You build your rank list where you want to go. Don't adjust based off of where you think you might be going. You will be surprised what happens in the match. I was.
And remember too, we're not allowed to say we are going to rank you to match. We're going to blah, blah, blah. That is illegal. And we're not supposed to say that. So if anybody is saying that sort of thing, they shouldn't be. And again, sometimes that is a brand new program director that may not have as clear of an understanding of the rules as they should. But yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Don't let that influence your decision.
Yeah, I think technically all post-match communication is considered a match violation. Technically, I would even, I guess, maybe even the thank you notes are. I don't know. I mean, people do them anyway. I feel like you can't really go wrong with a thank you note, but.
Fine. That's okay. Those are okay because those are you're expressing gratitude for the day. And that's fine. That's
I
okay.
think it's we are allowed to reach out, but programs aren't supposed to reach out to you.
That's right.
So that's why it's definitely don't expect to get like a reply. I don't think I got a single reply for my thank you notes, and I didn't expect to. So don't expect to hear back from them.
Okay. Maybe one more. What do you think? Oh, here we go. How long are virtual interviews on average? I would say that the entire piece will be either a morning or an afternoon. Was that your experience, Alex?
Overall, yes. Most of them were like 4 hours or less. I did have some where I was expected to sit in their didactics all morning and then interview with them in the afternoon. So it was a full like several hours of a day. You will know ahead of time. You'll know what the schedule looks like. They're pretty upfront with all of that. And especially if they're using like Thalamus, you'll get your schedule and your interviewers ahead of time, which is also a good note. If you see who your interviewers are in advance, look them up. Google who you're interviewing with. What are their niches in medicine? Because then it could be an easy talking point. Like me, I did a sim fellowship at my school, so anytime that I saw I was with a sim faculty member, you bet I was bringing it up as a talking point. So you're trying to relate to them and knowing what they're passionate about is very helpful.
So, what are your thoughts on using personal connections when talking to programs? Say, for instance, we know residents, attendings, or general hospital staff. Is it a red flag to talk about your connections during interviews or audition rotations? I don't think so. I think that demonstrates you know people that have spoken positively about the program. That's a positive connection to me. I mean, you're not going to show up in an interview and go, "I know seven residents that are here and they all hate it. Thanks for interviewing me," right? Like it is understood that that is a positive connection that you were describing, and it also demonstrates that you have done your homework, right? Like you know some about the program and have some insight, and that should be welcomed by the faculty that you're rotating with. Or
Absolutely. And the other thing I would say about it too, though, is if you know someone by association, I don't know that I'd bring it up because you can bet that they're gonna ask that person about you later. So, like, say we've interacted, you're on my Zoom call right now and you interview with LSU and you're like, oh, I know Alex and I don't, we didn't speak on this. I'd be like, I don't know who they are. And that's not gonna look very favorable upon you. Like, make sure you have good connections in case they do ask.
No, and I think that's a, I've got a faculty now and a senior resident who both came and attended. I did a DO breakout session at EMRA when they were like first and second year students. And that's what got them interested in our program. And that's just such a cool connection to have. And you all have those people. You have those people that you know regionally or nationally, and that may lead you to a program. And that is a super awesome compliment. And I think that's totally worth bringing up.
Absolutely. That would definitely be a good time if you don't know someone personally to bring it up. I did that in some of my interviews where kind of same situation. Like I saw them speak and I was able to say, like, hey, I was at SAEM and I saw your lecture and that's how I got interested in your program. Specifically to that person. So like I didn't know them super personally, but if you're throwing it out there like, oh yeah, I'm besties with Alex and we haven't talked, like that's a different story.
Right, for sure.
What other questions do we have? We're hitting that hour mark, so we want to be respectful of everyone's time, but we're happy to answer anything else because we are here for you.
One last thing I would say is, as you all get on the interview trail, you're going to figure out really quickly what a small community the EM programs are. Like, we all work together nationally. We're on committees together. We all attend CORD together. We got the CORD town hall meeting, business meeting Sunday at ASAP. The room's going to be full of program leaders from all over the country. And I don't say that in a menacing way at all. This is a cool, really cool thing about emergency medicine. So you will be in an interview, and wherever you rotated, did your, sub eye, someone's going to say, "Oh, I saw you did a, you rotated with so and so. How are they doing?" And it will be really surprising to you how well connected the community is. And that's one of the things I love about our specialty.
Absolutely. It happened all the time. That's also the shameless plug too. Again, come to Houston. We're excited to have great programming at ACOEP. If you're going to be at ASAP coming up this weekend, I'm flying in on Monday, so I hope to see you there as well. Definitely encourage you guys to network, especially as fourth years now. If you can swing it to get to a conference, it is very, very helpful. And I know we have some non-fourth years on here, so shout out to you. Go to conferences, go network. It will serve you so well in the future.
So congratulations, you're now all interview experts. Way to go.
You're ahead of your peers. You're already preparing for interviews. Look at you guys go. This lecture is recorded and it will be uploaded to the ACOEP RSO website under virtual lectures. So if you have anyone who wanted to watch this and could not be there, let them know. Hopefully we'll get it up over the weekend. I'll download it now, hopefully edit it somewhat soon. I'll say it'll be pretty quick, but I, like I said, I work every single day until I fly out at like 6 a.m. to go to ASAP on Monday morning. So I'm hoping I can get it done, but I'm going to be busy the next few days. So I will say my goal is within the week. This should be up.
And thank you all for the opportunity tonight. Really always appreciate any time to connect.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Burns. Always a pleasure to have a DO on here.
You bet. Take care of our people, right?
For sure. I'll stop the
Okay.
recording. I'll hang out just for a little bit in case anybody has anything else.